This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. That is that bass dropping in, and you know, wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Ritual and The Gaming Ride Home. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who's rocking that RTX audio, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I am. I'm trying it today. We'll see how it works. Also, up top on the quick, the official The Last of Us podcast, I believe it should start this week on the 9th.
Why is that notable, Christian Spicer?
I'm the host of it.
Whoa! What? Kaboom! Yeah, and it is, based on the tiny little teaser trailer that I got to hear, that anybody can hear right now. It sounds very high quality, very amazing. You got access to everybody involved, right? The janitors at Naughty Dog. You talked to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Short answer, yes. The first episode is the 9th. Like, as you mentioned, the trailer is out now. You can find it in your RSS podcast provider of choice, the official The Last of Us podcast. And then another thing I need to say quickly up top. If you've listened to this show before, I hope you know where Jeff and I stand on a lot of things. As someone who has joked about, who has done CrossFit in the past and has made CrossFit jokes in the past and jokes about doing CrossFit, about joking about doing CrossFit, I need to say, screw that guy. You know what I mean? Totally tone deaf tweets. It makes me embarrassed to have participated. Good on Reebok for backing out and no longer affiliating with CrossFit. And good on all the boxes that are also backing out, because this is a family-friendly show, so I can't say what I want to say, but screw that guy.
You're definitely doing some burpees and anger this week, though. I can tell. No, it's true.
I am flipping all of the tractor tires over to his house and through his windows, you know?
Hey, for real,
what a jerk, that guy. What a jerk.
I actually don't even know. There's so many jerks at this point, I don't even know what. I haven't even followed this one, so I don't even know the reference yet, but I'm sure I'll find out very soon, and I'm sure you're justified in your comments. I I have to say, we got lots of video game stuff to talk about this week, which is good. You know, there's still news happening, lots of things delayed, and I think rightfully so. Things that we thought were going to be happening this week were delayed, and I'm glad that some of these corporations realized that now is not the moment, and that other voices needed to be heard and room needed to be made for that. So I'm glad about that. But there's still lots of video game news to talk about, a lot of video games to celebrate, and that's what we're here to do. We have an awesome guest to do it with this week. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But once again, this week, DLC stands for your downloadable Cicero, because we have gamer, VO artist, co-host of the Discovery Debrief, and adventurer in Rivals of Waterdeep, our friend Cicero Holmes is back with us. Hey, Cicero!
I am taking bows right now. That was one heck of an intro. Thank you very much. I am so glad to be back home, man.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you. It has been too long. How are you? How are you holding up?
You know, I am, you know, all things being considered, I'm still okay. I get up every morning, I stretch my legs and my arms and take a breath and, you know, keep trying to add positivity into the world.
Well, I have to say, I am enjoying immensely the things you guys are doing on Rivals of Waterdeep.
We had
Sharif on last week, and we talked to him about the show, and you are a part of that team as well, and it's a lot of fun. The musical episode,
yes,
we heard teased as well, so I'm very excited to hear how that comes out.
Yeah, well, it was today.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. I have not seen the stream, so I'm excited to hear the podcast.
Yes. And full disclosure, as am I, because I was running a 5K today, did not actually participate in the musical stream.
You chickened out?
Oh,
you
chickened out?
To save everyone's ears. It is what it is. And actually, you know, for those of you who don't know, Cicero Holmes is taking a little break from the season for Rivals of Waterdeep. So the next season is upcoming and I won't be participating. The world was heavy. There were lots of things going on and, both in my life and in the world. And I'm taking some time for some self-care. So my character, my bard, his name is Perrin Underboo. Perrin is going to be doing some other particularly unwell things in Waterdeep. So we'll get to see you'll at least get to hear what Perrin is doing in the beginning of season 7 of Rivals of Waterdeep, which comes out, I believe, is June 21st. At 12. I'm doing that plug early. 12 p.m. Central on twitch.tv/D&D.
Very cool, man. Well, I applaud you for taking the time you need, and I can't wait for Perrin to be back with the team.
Thank you.
All right. Let's start the show the way we always do, with story of the week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. You can also hang out with us in the official DLC Discord, which you can find a link to, an invite to, at the top of our Reddit. Very fun people there. I've just discovered the Discord that's been around for literally years. But now I'm hanging out there all the time, seeing people talking great conversations. So I encourage people to check that out as well. But Cicero, you are our guest. So you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Oh, the story of the week has to be my good friend Kurt Schilling's 38 Studios, Kingdoms of Amalur, Re-Reckoning.
Yes.
The announcement of that very, actually very, very good game from a terrible human being. He can also go suck on a, he can suck on a sock. If you're a baseball fan, you know why that works. A great game. He actually had, what was it? Was it R.A. Salvatore?
Among others. Yeah, there was a lot of really big creative people that were brought together to make the Kingdoms of Amalur game. It was supposed to be, I think, the first of a trilogy.
Right.
Did not work out too well.
It didn't work out too well. The state of Delaware was not very happy with.
And Rhode Island.
Delaware and Rhode Island. Again, sorry, New York bias. Rhode Island and Delaware are basically the same thing to us. Get out of here.
It was there are grieved parties along a trail of tears that led to the making of what I agree with you, Cicero, is actually a pretty decent role playing game.
Yes.
So, you know, this was what, 2012 it came out, right? Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And I actually really dug this game when it came out. But you're right. The story behind Kingdoms of Amalur is fascinating. If any listeners do not know it, it is long, it is wild, it took many years of lots of litigation in courts, but the short version is basically 38 Studios, which is named that way because of Kurt Schilling's number, and he founded the studio. This was like their big game. They were going to make an MMO based on this universe. They put a lot of money and effort into building the fiction of this universe, the lore. And then they got a loan from the state of Rhode Island for $50 million, which was nowhere near enough to make this game. And it bankrupted the studio, and they defaulted on the loan, and a bunch of taxpayers got screwed over. And it was just a whole nightmare. The studio went down. The game came out. And like we said, I thought it was pretty decent. So this is a remake, or not a remake, a remaster, although I guess some sections of the game will be remade. They say, quote, refined gameplay, improved visuals. Coming out August 18th. Are you excited about this? I mean, I guess we can talk about it in two prongs, because you brought it up this way, and the only way to talk about this is, A, are you excited about this game getting a remaster? And B, do we want to support this thing, because clearly the people who actually made it and the people who actually funded it aren't going to get any of this money.
Right. So I'll address the second question first. And this is a tough philosophical stance that I take with a lot of different things. And I try to separate the art that was created from the artist who created it.
Yeah.
And because if you dig deep enough and hard enough, you will find something objectionable about any artist that you like, except for everyone on this podcast currently.
of course.
But to that point, even if you know something is terrible, especially if you know that the person that is objectionable isn't going to profit off of you consuming whatever that art is, then it's kind of okay to enjoy it for what it is. You kind of get a pass. And, you know, I mean, that being said, I don't eat at Delicious Hate Chick-fil-A, Delicious Hate Chicken, or, you know, any of those other places, because I find their politics objectionable. So I don't patronize those places. But Kingdoms of Amalur, The Re-Reckoning, I think I would think about purchasing because of all of the stuff that I said. Having said all that, I'm happy that it's getting notice. I doubt that I'll download it. Unless it's in Game Pass. If it's in Game Pass, I'll download it and I'll play it.
That's interesting. I wonder if it will be. Evidently, it's being handled by Kaiko. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. This is the German studio that also did the remasters of the Darksiders games, Darksiders War Mastered Edition and Darksiders 2, the Deathfinitive Edition, both of which I thought were handled very, very well and were impressive remasters. So it sounds like it's in good hands. But it's a strange thing. I saw Corey Barlog of Sony Santa Monica tweet about this and saying that, you know, if this was a movie that was being reissued or something about it was coming out, the original creators, people who worked on that thing, would get some compensation. But because it's a video game, if you're not actively employed by a studio, you don't get paid, which is, you know, a double-edged sword for sure. Christian, did you play this game when it came out? I don't remember. I know that this was during the weekend confirmed days because I remember talking about it on that podcast, but I'm not sure if you played this.
If I did, it wasn't for any meaningful amount of time. Like, I remember the controversies around it much more than I remember anything about the game. Yeah. Other than people saying, hey, it's actually pretty good. Like, you know, the hubbubaloo is what I know about it. But I'm excited for it to get a second chance and to find a second audience. I don't know. I don't know if it's if there's a lot of people are looking for it, to be perfectly honest. There are so many games. I just worry how anything finds a foothold or finds traction right now. But maybe this has enough because of the past controversy.
Are there so many games or are there too many games?
Definitely the one that we have a bumper for.
just wondering.
But hopefully maybe this leads to something bigger and they actually do make this a franchise, right? It did seem like they put a lot of time and effort into kind of creating a world, and maybe them bringing it back this way allows more of that world to be seen later, and that could be fun.
I'm genuinely curious if my positive feelings about this game will endure a re-release. You know, if it only felt like it was good because it came out in 2012, or if it felt like it was good because I kind of had low expectations for it when it came out, or if it's genuinely good. And I'm very curious. I don't know if it's, you know, $40 curious because I think that's what it's going to cost when it comes out.
Well, on August 18th. Again, I think the hope is since it popped up on the, you know, it got leaked on the Microsoft Store, that maybe yeah, it'll be part of Game Pass. And, you know, and this is, to me, this is the perfect type of game to be released in essentially the last quarter of the twilight of a console generation. It's not a new IP. It's not a sequel to a, you know, beloved franchise, you know, a la Last of Us. But it's a game that some people may have played before. It may be a game that you had missed at one point, and now it's out and it looks better than it ever had, you know, ever had been before, plays better than it ever played before. And now you get a chance to check it out before you go out and purchase, you know, spend the rest of your, year savings on new consoles and equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like the Fuller House of video games, right?
It's absolutely.
Like, I wouldn't buy the DVD box set, the Fuller House, but it's on Netflix, so I'm going to watch a couple episodes just of curiosity, you know, mm-hmm. just to see how I felt about Full House and what they've done with it now. It's going to feel like it's kind of, yeah. Or I hope it is a Game Pass game. Yeah, or nonstop binging,
right? Yeah. Cut it out.
Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
It has been long rumored and it's happening, and maybe it was meant to be fully revealed at EA Play, this year's EA Play, which has been postponed until June 18th. But EA Access has come to Steam, and I think this is really big. I think seeing more of this kind of thing in the PC space is interesting, and I think a testament to, speaking of the week and confirmed days, it seemed like the story then was always like PC gaming is dying, right? Like,
couldn't have been more wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is interesting. And I think EA doing it via Steam is interesting as well versus Ubisoft, like Uplay Plus or whatever that theirs is called, where it's like its own service that you subscribe to. And there are certainly other subscription services on PC. But this feels like a big deal to me, especially considering EA has Origin and they had their own thing, right? Like, so they kind of already had their own thing on PC, and bringing it to Steam feels big. It feels big.
I agree. I think it is big. I think it also I wonder, and I would throw it out to both of you for your opinions, I wonder if this is a harbinger of things to come, in that the sort of consolidation of all these different disparate services on PC might be happening. We might be seeing the first domino of what will be like an Ubisoft Uplay on Steam or on the Epic Game Store, where instead of having all these different launchers, all these different places that your video games can live, they can all live on Steam, but then you can have these different services that are subsets of Steam that you pay for and give you access to early things, give you free games. I think that's a cleaner, more convenient way for me, from my perspective as a consumer. It seems cleaner and more convenient, but I wonder what you guys think. Cicero, what's your take on this?
So basically what you're saying, Jeff, is that you think Steam is going to be the smart TV of computer gaming?
Well, maybe. I mean, if only we could have one subscription that we, you know, with all these different services,
one
we're
subscription just gonna, to rule
we'd
them
call
all.
It something like cable. I don't know.
So I think what this really says to me, what this screams to me more than anything else, is that Anthem destroyed their PC business, EA. they were full speed ahead two and a half years ago with Origin Access. And they were really, really pushing it and in fact had created a premium model of their Origin service at EA Play, or at least had announced it at EA Play 2018, I think was.
I wouldn't be able to correct you, but I'll take your word for it.
But, you know, and since, you know, at that EA Play, the big game, the big AAA title, the thing that if you were there at that particular event that I think it was at the Palladium where I was, the one thing that everybody wanted to see was Anthem, and they had it behind closed doors. They invested a lot of money in that game. And, you know, we all know what happened with it. And a lot of what they were doing and what they were building was, you know, hinged upon the success of this game, and it didn't work. And now what they're finding is people have apathy towards this service because they're not gaining anything from it. Mm. And instead they should bring their service, you know, they realize smartly, let's just bring the same service that we have on the Xbox over to Steam and, you know, get our user base back. And have them, you know, like, okay, we don't have the big AAA title that is, you know, doing everything that everybody wants it to do, or is part of the conversation. But we do still have Madden on PC and we still have FIFA and we still have games, and we need to gain a foothold in the PC marketplace again. And so let's just introduce EA Access.
Yeah, I think you're probably accurate on that assessment. I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting to me that they wouldn't have recognized this. I mean, I guess the hubris of, hey, we'll just make our own thing, we don't have to give Steam any money. But the giving the games to the place where the people are seems like a pretty, you know, let's make our own store. It's like, oh, well, there's a whole lot of people coming into this store. But I guess, you know, these are the things that you learn as you go. And I wonder how much of this is playing into the Steam versus Epic Game Store thing. And, you know, here's another, a bullet in the chamber for Steam, or, I don't know. It remains to be seen if this is a singular event or if this bodes any particular way for the way all of these services are going to line up. If EA is he is a big player, you know, and they're talking about bringing over 25 EA games to Steam now. They're starting with the Dragon Age series and Need for Speed, and they're going to continue to allow that kind of early access thing, the discounts on purchases, all the stuff that came with EA access will be applicable on Steam. And I just wonder if that is going to move the needle at all on some of these other companies, these other publishers, these other services that have all been established. Because I think the fracturing of that, of having all these different disparate services across all these different launchers, I found it just fatiguing. Like, do we even have this game installed? Which launcher is it on? Where do I find it? It is nice. You know, as much as I don't want to create a monopoly for a game store for one company, it is nice to have that entire playlist on one in one place, and I can manage it all. I don't know. That's convenient to me, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. At this point, though, I don't think Ubisoft has any incentive to jump ship. And yeah. And stop, you know, again, if the rationale is sound that I'm making about EA, Ubisoft's still dropping hits and they've got, you know, multiples all over the place. But, you know, we haven't heard about Battlefield. We'll assume that Battlefield is going to drop this November, you know, both for the new consoles and for the PC. So, you know, that's going to be the big. Well, and, you know, the new Madden, but those are going to be the new big titles for EA access on PC and on console. My question is, does my EA access, membership carry over from my Xbox to Steam?
I think so. I think it's one membership. I don't quote me on that, but I think that's the case. Yeah.
Cause, you know, I had to pay for Origin access. And you know, and now I've got EA access and I've got both of those. So yeah. So hopefully
it's a lot of access. Awesome. That is a lot of access.
A lot of access to nothing.
Well, as for my story of the week, I think I'm going to go with this Avengers game footage. Cause I find it interesting. It's another THQ story, but this week, a preservationist of game lore of games gone by, a fellow by the name of Andrew Borman, posted a gameplay from this canceled Avengers game that got canceled back in 2011. This is a game that we heard a lot of rumblings about back in those days from THQ. They were working on this first person team based Avengers game, and it was targeted for the Xbox 360. I think that was the lead platform at the time. And I know I was excited about it. I remember mentioning it on several podcasts at the time, how excited I was. And then it got canceled and buried. But evidently there was playable builds of this thing and they have come to light. We've seen leaks of this kind of stuff before, but now this is a full 10-minute presentation of what the game was like at one point. And it is not a finished game. There are placeholder, you know, boxes where there would be enemies and the graphics are not completed, but you kind of get a sense of what this first person Avengers game would play like. There's a sequence with Iron Man. There's a sequence with Thor and the Hulk and Captain America. And I, for one, think it looks pretty fun. And I wonder what you guys think. I wonder why this game got canceled. What do you think, Cicero?
Well, it got canceled because there was no direction and it was going to cost them too much money. It was THQ. So as long as if it wasn't Saints Row, it just wasn't going to get made. it did look cool. The thing that I love most about this is, I'm a sucker for history and I'm a sucker for video game history, to find out about the lost things. And, you know, one of the great things, I live here in the Chicagoland area. One of the great things about, Chicago and the Chicagoland area is the Galloping Ghost Arcade. So shout out to Doc and the Galloping Ghost Arcade. It's the world's largest arcade. And, I think last count, I was there in February. There are 725 arcade cabinets there. And, you know, some of them are, you know, one of two or three in the world arcade boards for those games. But being able to sit around someone, the owner who helps to restore and acquire these different game boards and get them ready for people to play, is his passion about games and gaming and its history. So sitting down with someone who understands that stuff is really awesome. So being able to see stuff like this, like, oh, here is a game that they were going to make, but they didn't, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't get made, but here is something from that, is awesome to be able to see and just kind of like live in for a little while.
Yeah, clearly a lot of work was put in on this thing, and it's nice that it wasn't lost to history. It is an interesting, as you said, piece of history to look back and see what may have been. It actually reminded me a lot of the Marvel Powers United VR game that came out on Oculus, which is pretty decent. That first person perspective, it reminded me a lot of that, but you know, I don't know how much people want to be in the first person perspective playing superheroes. Like, part of the fun is seeing the superhero the whole time. Right. But I don't know. This looks kind of cool. Well, Christian, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I think it looked like it had potential. I'd probably agree that it was canned for probably missing benchmarks or something. You know, like it's had to have been very expensive, and something along the way didn't meet expectations and or was not going to come in on time. And who knows when. I certainly don't. Someone probably does. But when they were set to lose the license, I imagine that's part of it as well, like renegotiating that stuff. Or maybe there was something about like their other games needed to hit certain metrics in order for this to come out. Like, when you're dealing with major brands, major IPs like that, there are oftentimes a lot of other qualifiers in contracts. I don't know specifically for video games, but for other types of legal contracts, I've seen certainly the case. And so I feel like there was maybe something like that, but I do love seeing this stuff. I think it's really fun to see and hear about these games that never made it out. And then I love it when things like on the Super NES Mini, we got Star Fox 2, you know, like came out. I love stuff like that also. So hopefully we'll see more of this, you know, within a reason. I don't want like people to steal these things, right? Like, that's not great. But I do. And we should talk about Noclip also. And Half-Life 3,
right? Yeah,
you know, like
being made by Arkane, right?
Yeah, like Danny's work over there has been incredible, and that was such an incredible episode. So I hope that people see what he's doing and what our others are doing in this space, and treating it with respect. And we get to hear more of these stories because it's fascinating. And this game, particularly, there had been such a drought when this was scheduled to come out for these superhero games. I mean, I think this was this pre Arkham. I'm trying to get I forget when the first Arkham came out. It was but it was like around that time. Like, we were in that lull. And if this came out and knocked it out of the park, that would have been, you know, really exciting. So hopefully we'll see more of these things. And I love it. I really, really love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. I encourage people listening to check out the video. Arkham Asylum.
I'm on it. August 2009.
Yeah, oh, okay. So it predates this, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Another real quick story I wanted just to run by you guys. I don't know if either of you are, well, I know Christian, you used to be very into Destiny, Destiny 2. I don't know how big a Destiny player you are, Cicero, but Destiny 2 had a big in-game event that they teased, and this was sort of like the Fortnite-style in-game, something to log in at this time, and the world is going to change. And I'm not really a Destiny player anymore, and so I did not do that, but I did watch the reaction of people who were super excited about this, and it seemed to underwhelm a bit. It was a very long event that didn't, not much happened over the course of, I guess, the 90 minutes that it took for the Almighty, which is a big Destiny 2 being crash, I guess.
Some might say the same thing about our show, though, Jeff. So I'm okay with the 90 plus.
Our show is crashing in slow motion.
It takes 90 minutes, and not much happens.
You know? There you go. Yeah, and at the end, we all go.
The Almighty gives a parting gift. You know.
So I guess first question is: either of you pay attention to this? And second question is: do you think you know, do you think it was well handled? And do you think more of these kinds of in-game things should happen? And what's your take, Cicero?
So, yes, I used to be a big Destiny player and a Destiny 2 player. I took a break and then came back for Stadia.
That sounds like what Christian did.
Yeah. Destiny 2, it wasn't enough to both save Stadia and save my want to play Destiny 2. So no, I did not pay attention to this. I know that I've got good friends who are still very, very, very heavy Destiny 2 players. But even they didn't tell me about this. So probably didn't go over as well as they had hoped.
Yeah. Yeah, Christian, I like these ideas in theory, and I think Fortnite has done some really impactful, cool ones that really changed the game in a significant way. But I think the hype on stuff like this can get out of control, and then people have big expectations. And if it really isn't game changing, it kind of feels a little underwhelming. But I like this in the abstract, like the idea of an ongoing game where show up today. And that ongoing game is going to be altered in some significant way. And you're going to be there for that moment. Like making that a moment feels really cool. And I like the idea of more games doing this. It just doesn't feel like this one was a home run.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because they're hard to do, right? And Fortnite has certainly done a great job with them recently. But if memory serves correct, the first ones of theirs was also kind of overhyped and took a while. And it was like, well, I honestly forget what their first one was, but it's like, oh, the map changed, but not how we thought. And again, Fortnite, cream of the crop, done a really good job with this. You'd hope that Bungie and Destiny could have learned more from it and kind of built on it and done like a 2.0 version. But as you said, Jeff, I'm super excited to see this type of thing happening in Destiny because video games are a thing now that are, you know, especially these live service games that can create appointment doing, whether it be playing, viewing, or whatever.
Did you just coin that, or is that a thing you've heard before?
Appointment doing?
Because that's good.
Well, thanks. Then I coined it, and it's recorded, so I have it copyrighted. Perfect.
did you hear
appointment?
Appointment
viewing is a thing, right?
I know. That's why appointment doing is so good.
Appointment doing is very good.
You. Okay. Well, tune in next week. You're not going to want to miss it.
I have a hard time believing you came up with it. Is what I'm saying.
Well, that's why people are going to want to listen to DLC Live next week, where Jeff becomes the player who starts hating everything, and Christian has all the catchy jingles.
That's what happens when Christian goes off and works for Sony and does cool podcasts with awesome editors. It comes back with all these new phrases. And I'm like, what? It's like, it's like with the cheating spouse comes back. He's like, what? You never used to talk like that before.
I just got you flowers because I like you, Jeff. It's just to say hi. I like this a lot. I like this a lot. And I hope that they continue to do it and do a better job of it, or ones that satisfy fan expectations. But I think the beauty and the beast of Destiny has been for years trying to satisfy fan expectations. They have a very passionate fan base, of which I am part of, and my playtime is certainly ebbed and flowed over time, but like they get a lot right. It usually just takes them a couple of iterations, kudos to the team for trying. And I'm excited to see what Destiny continues to be. And I like them taking this swing.
So this event was a lot like, when your parents text you an emoji for the first time.
Okay. How so?
and in so much that they did it and they understand conceptually what they were trying to do, but of course they missed the mark.
That's amazing.
But to Christian's point, as they continue to do these types of things and listen, and the thing that is great about Destiny, about Bungie, is how close to their community they are and how much they actually listen to their community and make changes. So I think as they receive the feedback from this event, when they do their next event, a lot of that feedback will be reflected in that next event. Mm-hmm. So then your mom will actually send you the thinking face emoji when she when she really means to.
Yeah. Fewer eggplants, Mom. No more eggplants. Yeah, right.
That was just what we were having for dinner tonight.
I understand. Now I'm not hungry, Mom, at all.
Right. We had eggplants and then peach cobbler for dinner.
Oh, golly. On that note, let's time to thank our first sponsor, which is Ritual. Speaking of nutritious foods that we all love, oftentimes we eat nutritious foods because we want to do the right thing for our bodies. Even when you behave that way, even living that kind of life, you often aren't getting all of the essential nutrients that you need on a daily basis. Enter Ritual. This is the obsessively researched vitamin for women. And my wife has been taking Ritual. She started her Ritual several months ago now, has been so happy with the Ritual's essentials, which is that that vitamin, that nutrient-rich vitamin that is really all the stuff that most women don't get enough of from food. It's a clean, transparent product, which is, I think, important for my wife and probably important for many of you listening. It doesn't have a lot of the additives or ingredients that you can find in some vitamins, and all of the ingredients are there just like you would want to see on food on the label, so you know exactly what you're putting into your body. This was created by a woman who really wanted to find that kind of thing that she values in her food in a vitamin, a daily vitamin. So Ritual Essential for Women, the multivitamin reimagined, has D3 to omega-3. It fills in all the gaps in a woman's diet. They also have a no nausea capsule design that's gentle on an empty stomach, so you don't even have to worry about taking it with food. That's one of my wife's favorite things about it, is that it's much easier to remember to take a vitamin where you don't have to time it with your eating. And there's a mint in every tab. Excuse me. There's a mint tab in every bottle that keeps things fresh. It keeps your breath fresh. Oftentimes with these omega-3s, they have like a fishy aftertaste. Maybe gets your breath not the place you want it to be. That's all taken care of with the Ritual Essentials for Women. Plus, you're subscribed and it's delivered to you. It's super simple. You can just start your subscription and then you don't have to worry about it because Ritual comes to your door every month, which is pretty great. No strings attached on the subscription either. You can cancel at any time, which is pretty cool. So better health doesn't happen overnight. Right now, Ritual is offering listeners of DLC 10% off during their first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essentials for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/DLC to start your ritual today. That's 10% off your first 3 months at ritual.com/DLC, ritual.com/DLC. All right, it's time to talk about the games that we have been playing. And Cicero, looks like you've been playing some of that Valorant, which I think just went full free to play for everybody this just a couple days ago, right?
Yeah, it went 1.0 Tuesday, and that was my first time playing it. Was on Tuesday, and it's interesting. It's interesting. Now, so I just bought I just got my gaming rig, you know, my kick-ass gaming rig. And I was never a mouse and keyboard player, so I am terrible, at everything on mouse and keyboard. But so especially a game like Valorant was very, very difficult, but I just wanted to see it. Like, I just wanted to see what it was all about. And quick and dirty of it, like, if I could make an analogy, it's kind of like when, Lyle Lovett and Julia Roberts got married.
I love your analogies tonight. They're off the charts, man. I love them.
Thank you. So like you're like, hey, how did the two of those guys get together? But it works. This game is if the guys who made Counter-Strike played Overwatch and was like, we need to make the next Counter-Strike, more like Overwatch. And that's what Valorant is.
It's a little chocolate in my peanut butter in my chocolate.
Yeah, but it's more like, you know, it's more like chocolate in your tuna fish. Like, it should not work. You know, like, these two things.
As someone who's clearly never had chocolate tuna fish before, but go ahead.
Exactly. And, you know, it is all the rage in Sweden. but yeah, so like, it should not work, and it's working. I wonder for how long, but I guess, you know, as these games grow and live and they see what the meta is, based on the player base, they will evolve. And it'll be interesting to see what Valorant is 6 months from now, or a year from now.
It certainly seems to have made a big impression on a lot of people. And this is, you know, I think listeners to our show know very, very well that this is a blind spot for me. Here I am on a video game podcast, and this is clearly one of the biggest, most popular video games in the world right now. And it's just a genre that is not my interest. So I love it when people like you come on and talk about it and talk about, you know, things that you're interested in and give it a more perspective. But I think it's certainly, from the outside looking in, has been a game that seems like the ramp up to release, they've done a lot of things right, and they are handling it very smartly, it seems, building this new IP into something large and something that everyone seems to be paying attention to. And so just on that alone, which is, like, you know, I think job one of creating a great multiplayer experience. You know, we've seen lots of high profile multiplayer games. Lawbreakers comes to mind. There are lots of others on, you know, on this road, with Casualties on this road, that looked like they should have been, you know, big impactful games, and they didn't do job one, which is get a lot of people to play them. And if you're going to be a multiplayer only product, that's the first step, is getting a lot of people excited, so that the competition level, the player base, the you know, the infrastructure of your multiplayer world is sustainable, sustains the interest and excitement for the people that want to play it. So, you know, outside looking in, that feels like at least they did that much. And I really haven't gotten hands on with the game because I'm just not interested. But no, I'm impressed with what they've done.
Yeah.
It's real good.
Go ahead, man.
I was saying, it's like, you know, a testament to, even when it launched in closed beta, it felt more polished than a lot of games do at air quote release. And I think taking their time with it and rolling it out the way they did, and they were, you know, the Twitch, it had its pros and cons, certainly, but in terms of getting hype around it, where watching it is how you got access to it, and the care they put into the game and the tweaks we've seen already from when it kind of first launched in closed beta to now, you know, wide release. I think it's smart. I am curious to see how it spreads and how it lasts, but it's clearly a game that is well thought out and well designed. And while it does take, you know, things from this and things from that, it has its own identity that I think it's going to continue to lean into in ways that make it different than either one of those two things that it draws inspiration from. And if LOL is anything to go by, you know, it's going to be huge. And I don't see it slowing down. The only thing I think holding it back is the skill cap, not skill cap. What's the opposite of that? It people are good, and playing a first person shooter requires
skill floor.
Skill floor, yeah, like a high skill floor. I think it's the only thing that might hold it back, but it's really well done. And then a console port, you know, for next gen consoles or something, I think could help it as well, even though Riot certainly has not relied on those in the past.
Yeah, I wonder if that we'll see that. Yeah, obviously League of Legends not on any consoles, but a very different kind of game as well. So, you know, you would say Blizzard didn't put games on consoles, and then all of a sudden there's Overwatch on consoles. So I could see that happening. I could definitely see that happening. I imagine that might very well be in the works.
Yeah, I you know, as you were talking about games that go out there and they try and they don't gain that loot, that user base, a few weeks back, Amazon released their own shooter,
oh, yeah,
Crucible.
Right.
Which I played the tutorial and, I was left feeling a little, underwhelmed and talked to a bunch of other players who checked it out and felt similarly. And I have not heard a word about Crucible since.
Yeah. It goes to show you that I went, oh yeah. Again, right. That's just like not doing job one, right? Which right. is sort of getting in that headspace of the gamers. Obviously I'm disconnected from this whole thing, so I may not be the best person to even weigh in on that, but still, I'm certainly not unaware of Valorant. So, what else have you been playing, Cicero?
So I bought, right before to, accommodate a commute, I bought myself a Nintendo Switch Lite, mm-hmm. For Animal Crossing. And, after I disconnected that from my vein, I still needed stuff to play on my Twitch.
Oh, on my Switch. You bought it for a commute,
There was no commute. Yeah. Exactly. So, I had extra time. So I started playing a game called Treachery and Beatdown City.
Yeah.
Which is a game from a friend of mine, Sean Alexander Allen, and A New Challenger is the name of the studio. But think River City Ransom set in the Lower East Side of New York City. Or a New York City analog. And you just get to go and, run roughshod, especially if you are a person right now that has been affected by the recent events of the world, or of America. This game is a bit of catharsis. It is definitely a lot of fun to have a, multicultural group of players. Your first main protagonist is a Afro-Latina, and she's going out and she's whooping some butt, and she's going and she's trying to save the president who has been kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot of fun. It's retro in all the right ways. It's smart and it's challenging. And it's not that expensive on the Switch. So if you've got a Switch and you're looking for something to play, Treachery and Beatdown City.
Yeah, Khalif was telling us, or not Khalif, Sharif was telling us about this last week. And I I'd heard of it and I checked it out this week. It's pretty cool, man. The combat system is so clever to layer that kind of combat system on this kind of game. Very, very cool. Very clever. I like it. Anyway, that's Treachery in Beatdown City. It's on Switch. It's also on PC. I don't know if it's on other consoles, but
not yet. Yeah, not yet. Yeah. So the first console release was on Switch, though. That's cool.
Christian, you and I have been playing some things we can't talk about yet. I'm very excited to talk about them. But we've also been playing some Switch things. Some Switch things that we both checked out on Switch that are Switch things.
Yes, there are things I cannot talk about. And then there is The Outer Worlds on Switch, which I was provided a code for. This is my third time through the game, both on PS4 and then PC and then on Switch. And I don't know about you, Jeff, but I will say that I am so impressed by this game on Switch. The fact that it is on Switch kind of blows me away. Like, it is the game, from character...
Yeah.
As you'd expect. But let me finish.
Impressive that game of that size and scope, I'm playing it on a handheld, is
yes
impressive in the abstract. It is absolutely mind-blowing that a big open world RPG like The Outer Worlds is playable on a handheld, and it playable at all, and is there and works, and the whole game is there. Amazing. That is in itself shocking. Yes.
And then if you'd let me finish, mm-hmm. it is by far the worst version of the game.
Yeah.
And if you have any other way to play the game, I highly recommend you play the game, because as we talked about last year,
it's a very good game.
Incredible game.
Very good game.
I would also say that if you only have a Switch and this is the only way you can play this game, I would still recommend playing it.
Maybe.
I would recommend. I'm like 4 hours in on the Switch version, and it's not the best. And I doubt I'll put more that many more hours into it.
It is rough, dude. It is like you said, it is an engineering marvel that this, it seems to me that this game, which is, I don't know, it was like a 15 gig download on my Switch. I had to like clear off almost all my other Switch games, or it was something insane like that, 18 gigs, something like that. So I had to clear off like everything else on my Switch in order to get this on my original SD card. Just the fact that this gargantuan experience is there. Yes. But
are you playing on your TV or in handheld mode?
Handheld mode.
Okay, so that might make a difference, because I'm playing in handheld mode as well. I imagine on TV, I mean, I know it has like a little extra because of the dock, but I can't imagine it looks great blowed up.
It can't, right? I'm surprised that they managed to keep the draw distance the way it is, because you do see very far into the distance, but everything is blurry. Yeah. Close-up stuff is blurry.
Yeah.
Far-away stuff is blurry, to the point where it's almost difficult picking out enemies that are approaching you, because everything is blurry. It's unfortunate. The textures are all very, very low res. You walk into the cities, and it is – I counted to 1,000, 2,000. I got to 31,000 before the city loaded. And unfortunately, the first few quests in this – in the city, the first city you get to, which I think is called like Everspring, they send you out of the city and back into the city. Like, it's just
my initial playthrough on PS4 when it launched was the same way, though, where I was like on my base PS4, like it wasn't quite that long, but I remember being like, and it got better on console, great on an SSD on PC. I hope there's patching for that on Switch, but yes, it is excruciating.
Ooh, sure. Dude, it's set down your Switch and do something else level,
and then the Switch goes to sleep, like. Because you haven't touched it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, great game that I'm rooting for that won awards. It is a great game. We talked about it last year. Yes. And it deserves to be played by people. And if the Switch is the only way for you to play it. But that's not really how I would recommend it. I mean, I feel like this is not the kind of experience that you're going to come away from and go, wow, this really is a great game. I just feel like the content is buried underneath this poor presentation. And it feels like this version would be the one where it's like, oh, this big, cool, lengthy, deep, rich role-playing world. I can take it with me wherever I go. I can play, like Cicero was saying, on commutes, if we actually commuted anywhere anymore, the promise of the Switch is these big, huge games. You can bring them, incorporate them deeper into your life. Uh-huh. And I just don't feel like that is delivered here, because the load times are so long. The experience is just not great. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate to me.
I agree. And again, Game Pass. So there's, if you have a better way to play it,
yes, please play this game.
Please play it a better way. And I agree with you too. I think I would very much recommend this game for me personally. Like, I would be like, you know what, Christian, had you not had a code, you should buy this. If two things: one, cross save, and two, I still traveled and stand-up comedy was still a thing.
If the world was the world 6 months ago, yeah. Does it have cross save?
Not that I'm aware of, but honestly, yeah. I didn't look into it because I didn't.
Well, that would be huge. That would be huge. I don't think that it does, but that would be huge. That would be pretty cool.
But again, I also don't want to. Some people I know are still traveling, and their work requires them to. And please be safe and good on you. And, you know, keep doing what you need to do to provide for your family. And I understand that. So I'm not being dismissive that some people are still out there and they need to be out there commuting and traveling and all that stuff. And I think it could be a perfect fit for that. I am not doing any of that. And
yeah,
it's just not a perfect fit for me. Like, if Mortal Kombat 11 had come out today, I wouldn't have bought it on my Switch. You know what I mean? Like, I liked it on my Switch, and I bought Aftermath because I already had it on my Switch. But I'm not, the world's not a place where I'm looking to buy multi-platform games on my Switch right now.
It's also, another thing I didn't mention is it also is a very text heavy game, and they didn't seem to do really anything to
adjust. No, you can bump it up. Go into options.
I bumped it to max, dude. I bumped it up to 10, And it's still real. The text is very tiny, even at the max setting.
I mean, to
and
be fair, you did wear an eye patch for like half of last year.
I do have eyes that are, yes, my eyes are revolting against my face. I get it. But even so, you know, also changing the UI text size all the way up to 10, as I did, improved the situation. And I'm glad they included that option. It did not make the text huge. You know, you feel like, oh, I maxed out the text setting. It should be big. It's not big. It's still pretty small. And it doesn't affect the subtitles, which I couldn't find any slider to increase the size of the subtitles. And which, again, I usually turn subtitles off in these kinds of games, but the Switch is a situation where
Switch is subtitles on. Yep.
Probably have subtitles on because I probably would be playing it in places where I wouldn't have any audio going, you know? Like,
yep. Yeah,
it's problematic, and I just don't think it's not the way I would want anyone to play this game. Anyone, so
yeah, I mean that's the thing. If you are intent on playing it, I think it is a great game, and I think you can have fun on Switch. I think there are far better games on Switch that you likely haven't played yet. You know, to play. Also, it looks like a really great game comes out in like a month on Switch in Paper Mario. So, you know, unless you're hurting, it's hard to recommend this game in the world we're living in on Switch. Highly on recommend Switch, the game right, on right. anything else.
I think we've been clear about that. Yes.
But wait, guys, should I play it?
All right. Well, rest assured, dear listener, my playlist is a lot longer than that. There are three games that I've put a lot of hours into this week that I am not allowed to talk to you about yet. But next week, I think all of them come off of embargo. So we will be talking
part
about
one,
more.
Part two and part three?
Yeah,
all three of them?
Yeah, mostly part two, if you know what I'm saying. there are lots of games coming out. So what I have been playing a lot of VR, which it sounds like many of us have. So let's get to that. But first, I want to thank our second sponsor, which is the Gaming Ride Home, the Gaming Ride Home podcast, the one podcast video game obsessives listen to every day. It's video game news, all the headlines, rumors, reviews, hardware leaks, release date confirmations, and more, all delivered to you every day at 5 p.m. The show is hosted by former Game Informer and IGN legend Kyle Hilliard, and it's only 15 to 20 minutes long. It's like the Too Long Didn't Read as a service. Kyle is online all day reading all the tweets, checking all the rumor blogs, consolidating all the chat around the entire world of gaming so that he can catch you up on everything that happened while you were busy living life. If you need a daily dose of video game news in your life every day, check your podcast app right now and subscribe to the Gaming Ride Home. It's time to talk some VR. And Cicero, I know you said you were not playing this game in VR, but it is a VR staple. I'll let you talk a little bit about your experience with Elite Dangerous, because it just got big announcement this last week.
Big announcement.
Yeah.
She's got legs. Yeah, so
you said you couldn't do the singing episode. Get out of here.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. So she is Elite Dangerous, and she is about to release in 2021 Odyssey, which will give you the ability to walk around your ship. But even without being able to walk around your ship, Elite Dangerous is the best game that nobody is playing.
Somebody's playing it, except
there are thousands of people that are playing. it is so immersive. Because I'm an honest person, instead of building a PC, which I definitely could have done, I went to iBuyPower and I just bought a PC. So I bought the equivalent of the rich kid who just saw Fast and the Furious and bought himself the fast car instead of building it himself.
There's no shame in that. No shame in that. I mean, unless you're that kid. If you're that kid, there's shame in it, but not for the buying a PC.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a sweater around my neck right now. I just came down a ski slope.
You've gone full Chad.
Right. I've gone full Chad. Listen here, buddy. The machine is great. Part of the reason that I built this machine was so that, or that I bought this machine was so that I could play Elite Dangerous, which I didn't need to. It kills Elite Dangerous, but I also bought, what they call a HOTUS, a flight stick. Ooh. And a throttle.
You're serious business. You're all in.
Yeah. So I went from, I've been playing this game on, Xbox for 4 years and went to PC. There is no cross save. So I had to start from scratch, but I did not mind at all. And it is so great. They're June 9th. Cause there's nothing big coming out on June 9th. You guys should all be playing Elite Dangerous because they're going to release player owned fleet carriers, which are these giant, giant ships that multiple people can dock their ship on and they can travel halfway across the galaxy. What's going to happen is there's going to be this giant expedition where they're going to go from one end of the Milky Way galaxy to the other end of the Milky Way galaxy over the course of several real world weeks. It'll probably take about 6 weeks or so.
Wow.
Where they're going to travel using the fleet carriers as base stations to jump from one station to the other and just make their way across the galaxy. I think there are 12 or 15,000 people that are going to be making this journey across the galaxy in this game.
Dude.
I'm always just blown away at the ingenuity and the beauty of that community. I love Elite Dangerous.
I'm so glad we got to this game because we talk on the show a lot about games that you're dating versus games you're married to.
Right.
And this seems like a game you're married to. I love how passionate you are about it. You've been playing this for literally years, right?
Yes. It is. So, and it was one of those things when it was announced. It was announced for the Xbox. It was, I think, the very first early access game.
Yeah.
In their system. So when they announced that, I was really excited. And as soon as it was available, I bought it and started playing and knew instinctively that this was the game for me. And I had said several times on my former podcast, Spawn on Me, that this is a game that I may not pick up for months, but I know that 2 years from now, I'll still be playing. Mm-hmm. It definitely is that. It is. I am 100% married, fully in love with this game, and we just renewed our vows on PC.
Have you had the desire to play this in VR? Because I've heard, I mean, I've dabbled with it a little bit in VR, and I've heard that it is a great VR experience.
It's transcendent in VR. And like I said, so part of the reason that I bought this machine was so that I could play Elite Dangerous. The other part of that was so that I could play Elite Dangerous in VR.
Mm.
I have not yet purchased my new Oculus. I also bought a house. I'm moving this Friday. So,
oh, wow.
So I'm waiting. Yeah, thank you. I'm waiting until I move before I annoy my partner with more purchases of electronics and wires. And I have it in a more private space. I'm going to have an actual man cave. So there will be a VR section of my man cave for flying in the black.
Well, we will have to have you back to find out how that all pans out. Cause I played a little bit of Elite Dangerous, when VR was new, because it was like, this is one of the best versions of that experience. And ultimately for me, I just wanted more of the Eve Valkyrie experience, which is just like a video game, you know, an arcade game. And an Elite Dangerous is very much a simulator.
Yes.
For me, I was like, I can't get out of the docking station because I'm too terrible at this. Because you need some actual skill in that game to even just, it's like flying a real craft of some kind.
Yeah. So there is no hand holding in that game. There is,
yeah.
You know, there is a tutorial. that, you know, that you, if you spend an hour on the tutorial, you will be effective at doing the little things, docking, lifting off, closing your landing gear, those kinds of things. But you've got to invest that time then, to do those things. But if you just jump into the game, you're going to crash. It's going to be terrible. You're not going to have fun and you'll never play it again. So you definitely have to look at it as you're not going to go on a one night stand with, right. You're not going to just swipe right on Elite Dangerous and think that it's going to be a good time. You've got to ask them out on a date.
Yeah, put in the work,
and bring some flowers, and actively listen.
I have one more question about this, sure. And that is, how many buttons are on your sweet flight stick?
All right, I'm looking at it right now. So on the stick itself, there are 12 on the base, three buttons on the throttle, then the trigger. So that's 16, and then a little jog dial thing in the middle, and then on the throttle itself there are another 8 buttons or so.
Yeah, man, serious business. I love it.
Yeah, oh man, it's
you're
it's
in a good time. It's I love a good it that's time. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm pushing up my imaginary glasses right now.
well I can't wait to have you back, and we'll talk about the VR version when that all when you experience that.
Right on. But
Christian Spicer, you've been playing some VR this week as well.
I have, as a thing that will come back again in the parting gift. I've been listening to Tetris Effect soundtrack, and I was like, you know what? I need to play more Tetris Effect, an incredible version of arguably the best game of all time. And
yes,
I have moved.
Not even arguably. I think we said objectively.
Objectively. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Objectively, the best game of all time. And I have moved, and I have my PSVR. I know where it is. I'm not going to lie. I know where it is, but it's not set up. And I have my cable.
You got to set it up for Iron Man, dude.
The demo's out. I haven't, you know?
Yeah.
The demo's out and I haven't. And I have my cables organized. I got a pretty good little setup. I know where the new consoles are going to go when they come in. And I just haven't set it up, mostly because I hate those hand-mon controllers. All that
you've
being
got,
said,
you've got a spot set aside for the new controllers 5 months before they come out.
The new consoles?
That's what I meant. Yeah, the consoles. Yeah. The consoles.
I know exactly where they're going to go, dude. Come on,
you got a 5-month runway to when they come out. You got that spot. You dust it every day. You got that when HDMI cable just sitting there ready to be plugged in.
More or less, yes.
I love it.
I came into a new space.
How do you have that space set up for the PS5? We don't even know what the footprint's going to be.
Well, that's how it's set up. You know what I mean? Like I have a hole in my wall and I need 2 bricks to fill it. And so it's going to be the 1X and the PS5. Yeah. It's going to be a mini fridge and an ottoman, you know? So I'm very excited for both of them. So I say all that to say, I have now purchased Tetris Effect on a second console, and I bought it on Quest. I had been meaning to for a while. I think I said when it came out on Quest that it is a must play if you are a Quest owner. And I could probably tell a difference if I played the two like back to back, or if I played the PC version, you know, link cabled my Quest and played it on Steam or wherever, Epic Game Store, I think, wherever it is, and played it that way. I'm sure that's the best version of it. But having not played the PSVR version for a while now and sitting down and playing the Quest version, it is still incredible. Absolutely. Yeah. If you only have a Quest, and I do think Tetris Effect is best played in VR. If you don't have a VR headset, I still highly recommend Tetris Effect as an incredible game. But it is best in VR, in my opinion. And if you have a Quest, play Tetris Effect. You know, I sat down, just like booted up. I bought it. Like I should, you know, I'm going to play. I'm just going to download it. And then it was like, oh, well, you know, I kind of finished the campaign. real good game. And the soundtrack's incredible. The Tetris Effect, the way that game can transport you is still second to none. And it's new on Quest.
Meditative and peaceful and lovely, right? It's like a great game for our times, right?
It really is. And I think it's great on Quest because of that. Like I can, you know, just sit down or play it before bed anywhere, right? Like it doesn't require being tethered to anything, and it plays really, really well. So I was
my only gripe with it is that it, it's gripe's the wrong word, but my only, you know, you named off a couple of categories, you know, if you have a Quest, you absolutely should buy it. The only one you didn't bring up is if you already have it on PSVR and you have a Quest, do you need to rebuy it? And
I think
ultimately it's not like, it doesn't take advantage of the things that make Quest special, which is being able to spin around and move.
Oh, correct. Like, I don't go 360, but it makes it special for me in that I enjoy using my Quest.
Yes, for sure. I just don't feel, I don't feel like.
Yes.
Yes. If you are the kind of person that, you know, doesn't set up your PSVR every time, or it's a pain to set up your PSVR and it's super easy to slip on your Quest. Yes. But, and if you only have the Quest and have not played this game yet, then absolutely, I agree. It's just not, there's nothing special about it being on Quest other than it's on a headset that a lot of people have. There are other games like Super Hot, for example. Like, get it on Quest because it allows you to do things in that game that
a core makes a difference. Yes.
That's my only negative about it, really.
I agree. If you have it on PSVR, I would assume that's also a superior version of the game in some, you know, processing world, maybe more effects or particles or something like that. If you have your PSVR set up, there's no need to rebuy. If you are a regular PSVR user, no reason to rebuy it. But if you have a Quest and you think like, oh, it's been out for a long time on other headsets, like, it is still one of the best VR games, in my opinion, and it plays really, really well on Quest.
You can play something else on Quest that does take advantage of that moving and throwing yourself from place to place, right?
Yeah, and I feel like you talked about it last year when it came out.
I did.
And mm-hmm. I will say, do I zone out during VR talk? Sometimes. Second thing, so I might have zoned out. I might have been having a Tetris Effect moment when you were talking about this game.
It's basically the same thing that happens when you go into a town in the Outer Worlds on Switch. <You're just> like, goes to sleep, right?
I'll be honest, I haven't made it into the town yet, I think. I'm still waiting. I don't know if you gave this game enough praise, or I don't know if it's been updated since you played it.
Talked very enthusiastically about this game, but yes, go ahead.
It's my current favorite Quest game.
Like, really? Wow. Go ahead.
I love it. And so part of it is I've played Beat Saber till the cows come home. You know what I mean? Like, I think if I had just played Beat Saber for the first time, I'd be like, this is amazing. But having played tons of Beat Saber and so many of the big Quest games. So Pistol Whip, let me back up. Pistol Whip, it's kind of like you're on a conveyor belt like you would at the airport when you would go to the airport and you had a long way to walk. You could stand on that thing.
People mover.
Yeah, people mover. Just kind of chug along. You're kind of on one of those. And then it's a shooting gallery, more or less, right? Like picture Virtual Cop, or any of those games that you played, but set to great music and to a rhythm and a beat, kind of like Beat Saber, but you don't have to shoot on the beats. And then on that people mover, you know, columns and obstacles, you have to duck around things and move around things. And these enemies are popping out, you know, running across and appearing. And it has an aesthetic that is kind of like a, you know, synth-waved, neon-soaked version of Super Hot. So like kind of that same shapes for people, but maybe a little more realistic, but very similar to kind of that Super Hot. You see the polygons. And I love John Wick Hex, which is out on PS4. I should have mentioned it whenever that was last month when it came out. It's a great game. You should play it. But Pistol Whip feels like you're John Wick. Like I felt... So there's two great things about it. One, I felt like a badass. And two, I know I looked like an idiot, which is like the best combination. Like in my head, I'm like, womp, 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 and I'm like spinning the gun around and like twirling around columns. And I know my wife just walks in and immediately is like, you know what? I don't need to wait up for Christian to finish DLC tonight. I'm going to bed. You know what I mean? like my kids kick me in the shin and pretend they don't know me. You know, like,
yeah.
But it makes you feel
more than usual.
Yeah, right. It makes you feel so cool, the same way, similar to how cool I feel playing drums in Rock Band, you know, and then like seeing me and being like, oh, I'm missing most of the foot pedals.
But it's like exactly the promise of video games, you know, is
yes.
feeling like you're awesome at something that you are could never actually be awesome at, you know?
Yes. And that is what the testament I will give, one has a great score. And I think there's like 15 scenes that you go through now, various difficulties. And I'm not sure how many it launched with. I think that I counted about 15 that I could kind of have access to right now. But I also want to give it credit for the aiming mechanic, where I felt like I was hitting things when I thought I should be hitting them. And to
it's
me,
a
that
subtle
means-
thing. It's a subtle thing that would only pop out if it was wrong, but takes a whole lot of work to get right.
Yes. And I imagine there's some semblance of aim assist to it, because a lot of early VR shooting games, it's like, look down the scope. And I'm like, but the weight of this wand's not right. And it's like trembly and weird. And like, it's not a super great fidelity in terms of tracking my movements. Here, I miss. It's not like you pull the trigger and the bullet's like wanted, you know, like it just bends around corners and hits people. But I always felt like I made the shot that I should make. And not every VR shooting game is that way. And Pistol Whip, I think, nails that feel. It has you feeling like a total badass. The music is phenomenal. And I loved those games as a kid. I loved Virtua Cop. What was the Namco one that with the foot pedal to reload?
Time Crisis, right?
Time Crisis. Yeah. I love Time. And this feels similar to that. Like Time Crisis had a lot of pushing forward. Like you'd run up to cover and like stepping on the foot pedal to reload is really cool. Pistol Whip, you're bringing your gun down to reload. And just like that, kind of like whipping it down, I found myself doing it to the beat. And then like pivoting around columns, ducking under things, popping up. And then if enemies get close enough to you, you can, you know, pistol whip them per the name. It is flawlessly executed. I don't even know if it's available on other VR headsets. I'd have to imagine it is. But it plays so very, very well on Quest that I know it's a year old. I think it got updated kind of recently. I don't know what it added. But if you, like me, have already zoned out, wake up now and check out Pistol Whip on your Quest.
Yeah, I mean, this is made by one of the best
VR games. Right?
Cloudhead, yeah, one of the best VR game studios. They did the Gallery episodes 1 and 2, which I still think are must-play VR games. And I'm anxiously awaiting episode 3 of the Gallery. But this game shows their skill with this medium, and I agree with you. It's a perfect fit for Quest because you really do it just like Beat Saber. You really do want to be moving around and working up a sweat and doing cool things and feeling awesome, and you need space and you don't want to be encumbered with cables, and it has the right visual aesthetic that doing it on Quest doesn't feel like a downgrade because it's already abstracted anyway and cool. And yeah, it's fantastic.
And I know you can't have parties right now, but it's also a perfect party game. Like it's a type like Beat Saber. You put it on and you instinctively know what to do. It's not complicated. Like you teleport by this and this is your move. It's like, no,
right.
You look in your hand. You have this thing that you know what is. You point it at these things that are pointing them at you and you're already moving. It's really nice.
So that's Pistol Whip on Quest. I've been playing a few things in VR as well. Christian, have you heard of 3D Sen VR?
I have not, but I have heard of the other thing you're going to talk about.
Okay. Well, 3D Sen VR, it's 3D and then S-E-N VR. Single person developer made it. It's in early access on Steam right now, $20. And it is an NES ROM emulator for VR.
Huh. So you
put NES ROMs that you legally own into this thing, and it supports a very small subset of total NES ROMs. But the ones it does support, it brings them into VR in incredible ways. So Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario World, or not World, Super Mario 2, I think is one of the games. Metroid, Castlevania, it's got the Mega Man it supports Batman, Christian, looking in your direction. And what it does.
What? Sorry, I zoned out there for a second. What were we talking about?
Batman! Batman on NES Batman in VR. What it does is it takes the sprites. First of all, everybody listening, just Google a 3D Sen VR video and watch it on YouTube, because I'm not going to be able to do justice to the description, but I'll try. It basically takes the sprites and kind of extrudes them and makes them three-dimensional, these 2D 8-bit sprites. But not every time. Like, it's smart enough, and each game that they support, that it is supported on 3D Sen, is done. It's a bespoke experience, right? It's not just an emulator. It's not just an NES emulator. And it's not just an algorithm that takes the game and puts it into 3D. Each game is specifically coded to look right. And there are special effects, like on Zelda, the water like ripples and moves. And it's like, you can lean in and look around the back of them. You can play Zelda in first person mode. It's got Duck Hunt, and the gun is a rendered 3D thing. It turns your controller into a gun, so you can play it. But everything's in 3D. The worlds are all blocky. Things are extruded, but also like trees are done as full 3D trees. So each sprite has been looked at and modeled in 3D to specifically look as the best way it can in this 3D world. You really have to check this out. It's wild.
I have two questions. One, is this legal? Two, is this the? I guess the question is this how you'd want to play any of these games, or is this just like a cool party trick? Does that make sense? Like, would you want to replay Mario 3 this way?
I think it's both. I think it's a cool party trick, but also it's a legit fun way to play these games, because you're still looking at what is ostensibly a virtual screen of a television screen. You know, it doesn't take place all around you, right? If you're playing Mario and you walk
right, I'm watching some videos of Mario 3. It looks scrolls, really cool.
It scrolls right, like out of an invisible line, right? It's not just enveloped around all around you. So you're still looking at the game. You can still play the game as you would, but you can also lean into the world, and it just looks really cool. It looks super cool. And it's got full three-dimensional features to it. So I think it's both. The legality, it must be, right? Because they're charging money for it. This dude's charging money for it. And I think the disclaimer is you must legally own all these ROMs in order to play them in this game.
Or they're not making the game. They're just making the updates to the ROM that you already own or whatever.
Yeah, it's a front end to process these ROMs in some way, which I don't think, like, MAME was never illegal. It was just the ROMs that MAME would play for you were, you know? So, I don't know. I think that may be the reason it works, but it's cool. You should check it out. I think it's right up your alley as somebody who loves retro as much as you do. So,
does it support Genesis ROMs? I see a bunch of
not
Nintendo
yet. I don't think so. Yeah, it's only Nintendo right now. But hopefully, this dude keeps chugging away and like adds more to the library.
How are you controlling the camera that's zooming in and zooming out of the camera
with your face?
Oh,
your head. You're leaning closer to it or moving your head around.
Oh, you still play games with your hands?
Yeah, noob. So another VR game that I have been playing this week is called The Wizards Dark Times, which is the sequel to The Wizards, which I guess also had a subtitle that I don't recall. This originally was going to be, I think, an expansion for The Wizards, but it became a full-fledged sequel. And pretty much every aspect of that game, that first game, has been expanded upon with The Wizards Dark Times. This is a very cool VR experience where you play as a wizard, a single player adventure where you're going through a fantasy story. You're getting elemental powers. There's like 11 spells that you earn over the course of the game. And, everything from like fireballs and ice bow and arrow to like an electrical storm and an arcane pulse, which is like this force push thing. And each of those spells is cast with a physical gesture of your hands. And the gestures are so cleverly I think, thought of. If you remember, there was a game that Insomniac did called The Unspoken, which was an Oculus exclusive, like, mage battling game. And it was all about casting spells, and the casting of the spells also involved hand gestures, but it was more like almost like a mini game. Each spell you cast was like a little mini game that you had to solve before you could cast it. It was really fun, frenetic and crazy. But this game takes that, and instead of having it be like a little mini game to cast a spell, it's not like tracing something in the sky or, you know, pulling out an anvil like in an Unspoken and hitting something. It's actually kind of, they've created these gestures that feel like what a wizard might actually do to create that spell. Like, for example, the sort of force push arcane pulse spell, you grip the grip buttons and then pull your hands toward your body to charge it, and then push your hands forward to release the spell. And so you're literally doing this sort of force push thing with a very thematic force push move. So you're like gripping your hands, pulling them into you, and then pushing them forward. And it feels right. So there's a spell where you create a shield, an arcane shield, and you like push a button, the trigger button, and then pull your hand from your right shoulder across your body down in a diagonal. And it feels like you're pulling a shield from behind your back. Or there's a lot of examples, 11 different spells, but all of them sort of have that feeling of doing something really cool in the moment. And also all the spells have like a secondary superpower where you create them and then you like press your hands together and pull your hands apart and they become something else, like the ice bow. The way you cast that is you push the both triggers of both hands and put your hands out like you're making a T, you know, like cruciform or something, and then you pull your hands together, and as you bring both hands from being far apart all the way together, the ice bow forms, and then you've got this bow that you can pull and shoot ice arrows, and you freeze bad guys, and then you can force push their frozen forms and break them all apart, you know, like Demolition Man, like Wesley Snipes at the end of Demolition Man. But the ice bow also has the secondary attack where if you've got the ice bow already formed, you can press your hands together and then pull the ice bow apart, and it becomes two ice daggers that are like single attack, instant freeze on the bad guys. It's really cool. It's really, really, really cool. And, you know, the game is a little rough around the edges. It's not super, super polished, but it's real fun. The enemies are fun. There's a lot of climbing, sort of like The Climb. It borrows the VR mechanics of The Climb, where you're climbing on surfaces and gripping things and moving. It's a lot of that. There's a lot of traversal in that kind of way, going down ropes and up ladders and stuff like that, which is all very fun in VR. And the enemies have variety. The game looks pretty decent. It's an Unreal Engine game that looks very Unreal Engine-y, but it's a very attractive game in VR. And if I hadn't played Half-Life Alyx, I would think it looked really, really good. But then you play Half-Life Alyx again and you're like, oh yeah, no VR game looks like this. But I really can recommend The Wizard's Dark Times for anybody. I'm playing it on Steam. I think it's available on Oculus Store as well and stuff. But I was playing that quite a bit this week, and then popped back into Half-Life Alyx because they just had that new liquid update where they added a fluid shader to bottles to add liquid inside them. And I was like, I got to see this. And I booted the game back up and I was like, oh, right. All the VR games I've been playing recently, none of them look like this. None of them look as good as this game. But the liquid shader is very cool. It's completely unnecessary. It changes nothing about the game, but bottles that you pick up have liquid in them, and you can shake the liquid around and it looks super real. And you know, hold it right up to your face, it looks super real. Throw the bottle against the wall, it shatters and liquid spills out. It's just a cool thing that they added to the game, so I dug it. But it's hard playing that game and then any other VR game, because it really is head and shoulders above 99% of everything else out there.
Well, you know, it only took them 12 years to make right. it. So
yes, Yes, 12 years in bottomless pockets. You too right. could create a masterpiece. all right. Let us, I think that's going to be it for this episode. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Cicero Holmes, thank you so much for being here, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.
It was a great way to spend any day or evening. Highly recommend.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Where can folks keep up with you and all the things you do online?
Well, the best way to do so is, because I'm an old guy, is on Twitter. I am at Stubby Stan. I'm actually at Stubby Stan on all social media platforms. So, you know, Instagram and, you know, that's about it, because I don't Snap or TikTok. No videos of me dancing and or singing. So, but yeah, check out all the things that I'm doing. I'm on a bunch of different podcasts all over the place. You know, remember while you're doing that to find and follow my friends, the rest of my castmates over at the Rivals of Waterdeep.
Yes. Very, very cool show with lots of great people. Christian Spicer, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
The official The Last of Us podcast episode. What?
The official The Last of Us podcast?
The official.
Official?
We talking about practice, official.
Right.
Practice?
I'm very excited for people to check it out. You can already find the RSS if you just look for the official The Last of Us podcast. The teaser is up right now. I'm very excited for it. I think people are going to love it. And, you know, the game part one means so much to me. And this podcast is very special, I think, as well. So I'm excited for people to listen.
The thing that makes it special for me is the fact that you were like, I refuse to do this without my co-host, Jeff Cannata. And that's the part that makes it so special for me, is that...
I mean, to be fair, they actually pitched it that way, and I was like, just pushing you out of the door so quickly. They're like, we want both of you to do it. You know, you'll both get access to some people at Naughty Dog. And I was like, I don't know. I think Jeff is sick. Yeah. I haven't seen him in the office for weeks.
I have a counter offer. Let me save you half the money you were thinking of spending on this.
that's what it was. It's like, Jeff is so expensive. Do you know his rate? Oh my God.
He's very expensive.
You all, I will do it for, to be honest, never crossed my mind. I was like, is this in VR? No? Okay, we good. Let's do this.
No, I'm just teasing, because I do think they picked the perfect person. You couldn't be a better project for the better host. I mean, you're a Last of Us super fan. Just a dream project. It's perfect. And I'm so happy for you, man. It's great.
Thank you. Yeah, it'd be a weird podcast if it was like you saying, it is a beautiful game. I don't know, though.
Well, I can tell you folks that I think by the time you hear next week's episode, the embargo for the sequel will be up. Christian and I will have both finished it by then. And we will have, I think, a very, very in-depth discussion about that game, because it demands an in-depth discussion for sure.
When's the embargo for real?
I think it's the 12th.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Podcast is the 9th. Look for it. The official The Last of Us podcast. And I forget where I said it last week, but I'll say it again here. Black Lives Matter. Find a way in your community to affect change in a positive way and be part of making the world a better place. I know we sign off with it every show, but now, like always, be a part of the solution.
Yeah, absolutely. So say we all.
So say we all. Right. This is the way.
Yes, indeed. I've been very proud of this audience, the messages that I've gotten, because honestly, we weren't even sure if we should do an episode last week. I'm very proud of this audience and all the feedback that we've gotten. We will continue to do what we can in any small way. And I know that if there are ways that our community can elevate other voices, we will attempt to do that as well. I think that's the least we can do. And I hope people listening are seeking out voices that they may not have been listening to, sources of information they may not have been aware of before. All of that is part of opening our minds and understanding the world in this moment. I think it's important. That being said, I'm going to plug my stupid things that I do. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled 2 N's and 1 T. We love getting your feedback here at the show at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. So let us know anything about the show, about video games, or anything in life. We love hearing from you. Also, if you want to hear me talk about movies and TV shows, I do a podcast called the Slash Filmcast, where I do just that. And this last week, we talked about Tampopo, which is a really interesting film that you should be aware of if you're not. It's about ramen. Really cool. So you can find that at slashfilmcast.com. I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And The Dungeon Run, which is my long-form Dungeons & Dragons live play. And we took the week off last week, no episode of The Dungeon Run. We just thought it was time for us to step back. And I think that we will be resuming with the show this week. But either way, you can find it on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run. You can find us on IGN. We were on IGN last week as well.
Awesome.
With That's the cool. show, yeah. And you can find it as an audio podcast by searching for The Dungeon Run there. I think we're back next Wednesday, or the Wednesday of the week you're listening to this, at caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun at 6 p.m. Pacific time, where we record live. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Cicero, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do, but I want you to come back to me because I just had a brain fart and forgot it.
Okay, fair enough. Christian Spicer, what's your parting gift?
Yeah, double dose of music for people. I only had one written down, but Lady Gaga's new album it's a dark world, but it's a album that you can dance to, and it's fun, and my girls and I have enjoyed listening to it and moving around. And then what I mentioned earlier, the Tetris Effect official soundtrack is out on digital and Apple Music, Spotify, stuff like that. And it's such a phenomenal soundtrack that even if you don't play the game, I imagine you'll enjoy listening to the music, or you'll listen to the music and then go buy the game again. It's real nice.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. I remember now.
Go ahead.
All right. So I'm going to also double dip. So I will say one thing that you guys can watch, if you guys have Amazon Prime, you're human, at least if you're an American, you got it. So two things. One is I Am Not Your Negro. It's a documentary from James Baldwin that was filmed in the 60s or 70s. And he spends a fair amount of time speaking truth to power in a just provocative but powerful, powerful way. Please take a watch of that. And also, if you guys haven't watched, also on Amazon Prime, Upload. It's the first season of Upload. It's Jeff actually, and Christian, I think both of you guys would like it. It's really, really short. I was able to watch the entire season in a day. But it's set in the near future, and it's kind of like if Pushing Daisies met the Matrix.
Ooh, two of my favorite things.
Yeah. So,
very cool.
It's very much got that Pushing Daisies humor along with, some real weird future stuff.
Yeah, it's a show created by Greg Daniels from The Office. So good creator. Yeah, I haven't really watched it yet, but I intend to check it out. I've heard good things about Upload. And I Am Not Your Negro as well. I have not seen it. I need to watch that. We have a listener-suggested parting gift. This comes to us from Adam in Meridian, Ohio. Adam says, hi, thanks so much for DLC. I've been listening since the beginning and go way back to the Weekend Confirmed days. My wife recently purchased a Peloton bike to help keep us
active. We've seen the commercial. We've seen it, Adam. We know what happened.
We tried to get Peloton to sponsor us, but now we're doing the free advertising. Anyway, he says, my wife recently purchased a Peloton bike to help keep us active during these crazy times. I'm not here to convince anyone to drop the boatload of cash required for one of those bikes, but I'd love to try and establish a community of DLC fans that are already members or those thinking to join soon. So I created the Peloton tag, hashtag Geeks and Sneaks, in hopes of connecting up with fellow DLC fans. I figured, why not get some additional motivation to power through a workout, just like you've been helping us do for years? If not Peloton, find some other way to take care of your bodies. I battle ongoing depression and anxiety, and I find regular exercise helps me feel just as much better mentally as it does physically. Hopefully, we can all find ways to continue to uplift and motivate one another. Have a great and safe week. Thank you, Adam. I think that is great advice. Part of what we say about Geeks and Sneaks is definitely the mental part. I tell you, I've been feeling a lot of really dark thoughts these last few days and a couple of weeks and the entire of 2020 and the last 4 years. But I always feel better after I go for a run or do something physical. Your body does appreciate moving, and it wants to move. And once it's the hardest thing to do it, but after you do it, you go, oh yeah, I remember why it's supposed to feel good. So I love this. So if you have a Peloton, get on that hashtag Geeks and Sneaks tag and meet up with other DLC fans. And maybe we can get Peloton to sponsor us. That would be pretty great too. All right. My parting gift is a movie that I watched last night with my wife called Lovebirds. It's the new movie from Kumail Nanjiani. And what is the name of the female lead?
Issa Rae.
Issa Rae. She's so great. Yes. So great. I apologize for not remembering her name. But
also watch Insecure on HBO. Really great.
Yeah, I have not watched Insecure, and everybody says she's amazing, but she is so charming and so funny in this movie, and I'm already a fan of Kumail's, but we were laughing our heinies off watching Lovebirds. It is really funny. It is, I love that it's about two people that have been in a relationship a long time. It's a wacky comedy, but usually the wacky comedy is the two people that sort of fall for each other during it. And this one starts with people who already had fallen for each other and were kind of falling out of love for each other. And I just thought that was such a clever place to start. And it's a delightful, very funny movie. So yeah. I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix.
I've yet to watch it, but I know Moses Storm is in it as well. I don't know how big his role is. I hope it's substantial. But he's an incredible comedian and really, really funny dude as well. So it's on my queue. I just haven't sat down to I feel weird watching lighthearted stuff, if that makes sense.
It reminds me a lot of Game Night. It's a comedy that's also wrapped in, some other genre, but also wrapped in a comedy.
Right.
It is this movie burrito.
Okay, now I'm on board. Called it a burrito. I'm in.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be charming. I did not realize how gut busting funny it would be. And I mean, there are sequences where I was really laughing hard out loud with my wife. It was great.
Not to say that Netflix movies are lesser than straight to net, whatever, Scorsese had a Netflix film, whatever. But this was theatrical. This was a Road to Summer theatrical, before the Marvel movies come out swinging thing before COVID and they sold it to Netflix.
Back when there was a theatrical. Back when we had theatrical. Anyway, good stuff. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Cicero Holmes and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks hanging out in our live stream. We appreciate you making the show better in real time. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those awesome bumpers that you hear. Thank you To each and every one of you who tunes in, we appreciate you. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.